It was all a pipe dream, watching bodyboarding up on TV. Deep at reef, watching tension repeats, eating bakery feeds at 18, living the dream with no sunscreen. Yeah, we were so keen, surfing Aussie pipe, buying Riptide, eating shit.
G'day and welcome to the Riptide Bodyboarding Podcast, the home of bodyboarding. Thank you for joining us on episode 71 of our verbal journaling, and I'm your host, Luke O'Connor. Well, today I have an old friend on the potty, someone who's been on in the first 10 episodes, I believe, and I'm so grateful to have him back on again. There's so much to talk about. He is one of the coolest and smoothest cats out of the European continent, hailing from Portugal. He's a longtime friend. He's a man who has so many skills when it comes to bodyboarding, photography, videography, and just the art of communication. And with a soft and beautiful smile, I would like to introduce the Portuguese tart, none other than Antonio Sevilla. How are you, my good man?
Oh, man. I love your intros. This almost like it's one of the main reasons I've been listening to your to all your podcasts. It's just to get to know like each character's intro by Luke O'Connor. You're the best, man. You're the best.
Thank you, dude. Man, thank you. And I honestly mean it when I say you're one of the kindest and nicest people I've ever met. And with such beautiful communication skills. Like, that's something I really admire in people. I had to work on it very hard when I was younger because I had a terrible stutter and I would constantly fumble my words. But when I met you, and you're so versed in so many different languages and the way you like when me and Lauren, me and my wife now, Lozzie, when we came over and did that van trip and drove down from the top of Europe into the bottom of Europe and then into Africa, like when we stopped in Portugal, the only way that we got to know the crew so well was through your articulation of words and your beautiful communication and just you're so like welcoming and nice, bro, and it just opened up the whole community to us. So yeah, I always have you, I hold you in the fondest regards, man. And it's sick to have you back on the potty for episode 71. And you guys have had, you know, as we were talking off air, not a crazy winter, but a really consistent one. And I know you're coming out into the springtime. You're probably taking off the warm coats and dusting off the Speedos and ready to get into some summer life in Europe. But what's been going on over the last 4 to 6 months, man?
Oh man. Yeah. It's been a weird winter. Like, I mean, it was super consistent, even too consistent at some point, because we started off with like, usually the season is around here in Portugal, it starts in September. So we had like a few sessions in Nazaré, but not so many. And then it kind of like stopped early because we just got like bombarded with like huge south storms, which is not very frequent. They're not very frequent. And it kind of like ruined all the early season banks like Cova and Super Tubes. So there was like October, November was, they were like kind of weird months. So nothing really pumping. And then like in December, like Nazaré got good again. And we didn't have the chance to surf like good cover almost the whole season, which is like one of the funnest and most consistent waves that we have around here. And then I just feel like from January until now, like a lot of the reef breaks, they turn good pretty much. And yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
Well, and just to give all the listeners back home or wherever they're listening to their podcast at the moment, a bit of an understanding of how the storms form, you know, in the Atlantic Sea, the Atlantic Ocean, and how it all kind of pushes the swell down. Like my understanding is that it's usually forming up off kind of like England, Ireland and Scotland, and those storms are kind of following that kind of northwesterly flow down into the Bay of Biscay into France and then down into Portugal and Spain. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So yeah, usually all the swells they get formed like on the North Atlantic Ocean, but this season was a bit different because it was the opposite. We had a lot of big storms coming from south. That's why it ruined the banks and a lot of the spots that we usually surf, they were not good. Even a few reef breaks after a few months of those like southwest swells, even these reef breaks, they got a little bit of sand on the reef. So yeah, it felt like it was a bit too much at some point for our coastline. But yeah, at least there's waves. At least there was like every week there was a place to surf, and yeah, everybody's happy.
It definitely, everyone is happy when they're getting waves and getting in the ocean and getting that salt water cleanse. But isn't it funny, man, when you see what's on Instagram and then when you hear what's happening in real life or how social media portrays it? Like, obviously, you know, you're not out there flaunting it and kind of showing this, that, and the other. Like, a lot of your sections come in movies and videos and Instagram reels that collate all the footage together, and we'll obviously touch on that a little bit that down the line. But, you know, from my perspective over in Australia in the Australian summer, like, we had waves on and off, just the general little northeast swells or easterly trade swells, occasionally like a nice little south push that would make its way up the coast, and everyone knows those waves you go to when that sort of northeast wind's blowing. So, you know, looking over to your part of the world and neck of the woods, I was just thinking there were pumping waves all day long because I saw so many clips coming out or so many photos and snippets. And, yeah, just to hear it from yourself, how it's very different than what's portrayed online, it's always interesting to hear that.
Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of people shooting at the beach nowadays, a lot more than in the last few years. So it also, like, it makes it easier to stack clips and to have something from even like from some sessions where the waves are not that good. There's always, feels like there's always someone with a camera and posting online, which kind of like, it's good for your surfing, but it kind of sucks because they kind of blow up the spots pretty easily. And I do feel like this is a part where it's, maybe it's like a topic for another conversation, which is like, I feel like in Europe, since it's such a, surfing is such a like new thing in our culture, there's not too much people just care too much about Instagram and social media, I feel like. And I don't know, like, I feel like you guys in Australia, like, you just take things a bit more humble and a bit more secretly, and that preserves the spots a lot more, I feel like. And but yeah, it's always good sometimes to have footage of yourself and look at that. So I think Instagram,
it really is a double-edged sword, man. Yeah, no. So I didn't mean to interrupt it, Antonio, but I had to get in that. I think, you know, you're correct in saying that, like, it can be harmful for certain spots. And I know there's overexposure in certain areas, and there's so much froth in Europe, probably just because you guys are leading the way in the bodyboarding industry at the moment when it comes to, you know, the World Tour with the IBC. A lot of the comps are, you know, focused over in the, like, the European continents and South American continents. There's, like, a really good positive industry push over there. But then the double-edged sword is that, you know, you're going to have those spots that you guys might surf on a regular basis without kind of throwing on Instagram. If someone gets wind of that and they want to pump up their profile, or they're a up-and-coming photographer or videographer that is getting their business through Instagram, then they're going to put it on there because of, because of what they need to, well, they think they need to do to improve their business. And I think you're right in saying Australia has gone the other way recently, because we do have a lot of overexposure in certain spots, and we're actually probably going through a stage where it's turning back the other way, and rightly so in certain ways, because, you know, like, for example, like, the island had its time in the sun there for so many years, and I can remember that lineup being packed to the gills whenever a swell came through. And now it's probably not as packed. We haven't had many swells, but it's definitely not as glorified as it once was. Or, you know, like, I was talking with Sean Cooper the other day, every wave has its, like, time in the sun, and there's certain waves up and down our East Coast that, like, kind of get those that hype on it, like, in certain times of year. Like, there's a very famous wave around down, like, you know, the Cold Coast, Wollongong area, that had a lot of attention on it over maybe the last, like, 2 or 3 years, where then there was a wave further down the coast that might have had more attention on that in the previous years before that. And then there was Cape Fear that was also getting a lot of attention because of the transition from the Brow Boys to the bodyboarders and backwards and forwards. And now there's a really nice even group of, you know, watermen out there kind of really giving it a nudge. So, yeah, man, like it's so hard because you want to increase the popularity of the sport, but you don't want to bury it into the ground either. So, yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, fully. I fully agree with it feels like every year, like there's a certain wave that turns into a hype, and which is good because it kind of like shifts people towards that one sport, and it leaves like other sports a bit more uncrowded. So you're always going to, it's like an art. You're always going to play with it. And if you're good on reading the waves, like you always manage to get it, find the best spot and crowd it. But,
that's so true, isn't it? Like reading the waves, man, that's such a true statement. I think that's lost on this generation at the moment, if I was to be honest, with a lot of younger bodyboarders and surfers coming up. I mean, there's some out there that are definitely hunting it and wanting to know, but a lot of people are relying on international forecasting platforms to just tell them where and when the best swells are going to be. Like, for example, the other day, like, how's this? 3 days ago, I was at my local beach and I got out and I was just chatting to a local dentist who's a goat boater, and I see him in the water all the time. And he had obviously read the SwellNet forecast for that weekend coming up. And he's like, I'm chatting, and then we had waves on Friday. It's just this small south swell that's been running off like a swell they've had down off Tassie and all that kind of stuff. And it's been just a constant south pulse, really long period, but it's had its moments, you know what I mean? And over the last 4 days, I've surfed this same rip bowl, mucking around on my stand-up because it's just been 2 foot. But I know it's always going to be there, and it's just pulsing. And it's got 3 foot every now and again and whatever. But when I spoke to him, he had read that the Sunday was going to be the pulse of swell and the other days were going to just be whatever. And I said, oh, no, I'm pretty sure if you look into all 3 days, there's different times of the day with incoming tides and the way, you know, the charts kind of spike up with different overlapping long period swells, that you're going to get different moments, not just on the one day. But he was, and this is the prime example of like what I'm talking about, like he was so honed in on that forecast telling him that Sunday was the day that he was almost going to throw Saturday and Monday out the window because it was like, oh man, like I've had the forecast to tell me, like I'm going to get my fucking dinner date sorted. I'm going to, you know, take the kids to the footy game or something. But like, when you are a true bodyboarder and surfer, you scour those charts for any sort of abnormalities in them and realize that there's patterns forming, the way your beaches face. And I know you guys are much like the same over there in your core Portuguese bodyboarding community. Like, you guys have got to be onto it because you got massive tides, man. You got crazy changing weather conditions. Like, you've got a whole tight cut. Psycho.
Yeah. No, but it's also like it feels like every swell is kind of like an opportunity to know something new about like, I don't know, a certain spot that you're chasing or something. So, and it comes with a lot of time and years of experience. So it's you got to be onto it the whole time. It's something that has to be consistent.
What's up in your browser, man? Like if you were to pick up your phone now, what weather forecasting, you know, charts are you using?
You don't want
to get the results. Like, are you mixing some together, or is it just one you kind of go to and you trust it, or do you, yeah, how do you do it?
No, honestly, it's been like, well, it's been over the last 2 weeks, and it's going to stay for at least another week. It's been super stormy, so it's like that kind of wind that you don't even need to look at the forecast. It's terrible. But yeah, usually we just when we check it on the forecast, we got to go through like 3 or even 4 different websites to make sure, like, especially if it's like a pumping day, and you want to try to make sure like you're going to nail the right timing, or I don't know, because there's also like in Portugal there's a bit of variety of waves for the same kind of conditions, so we always kind of, yeah, it's like, for example, sometimes when I'm chasing waves with Mini, it's like the charts are good for, they can be good for a right-hander or a left-hander. And sometimes we split apart because like one of us wants to surf a right, the other one wants to surf a left. So it's kind of different that way.
Is Mini always looking for the lefts?
Mini is the one looking for the lefts, yeah. I mean, I'll be going for the lefts as well, but yeah, sometimes, yeah, it's, you got to play with the wind as well. And if I feel like it could be slightly better for the right, if there's a chance, I'll stick with the right.
Yeah, so, man, I'm the same. I definitely favor the rights, but I know Mini is a huge fan of the left. So I remember being in Nazaré with him, and it was just always the left yeah, bowls, yeah. Always his left backflips, left reverses. Yeah, they're on lock for old Miguel Coelho.
Holy. yeah, but it's been on his favor this year, right, I guess, because I've been telling him it's Mini's year. Like it feels like every pumping session we had, he took the bomb of the day. Like he was a standout. Yeah,
that's so cool to hear, man. Because we all know how much talent he has, but he's just got such a laid back attitude where he's just kind of easy go, easy come, easy please. And you know, it seems like, yeah, as you said, these last couple of years. Because he's now got a visa coming out to Australia, which I never thought was going to happen. He was always going to just cruise in Portugal for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Travel in other areas, but not get this sort of visa anyway. And, yeah, it just seems the last 12 months he's put his head down and really wants to pretty much to kick into gear, I guess, and tick off some of the goals that he's worked, like, wanted for ages. Speaking about, like, really good bodyboarders around your area, man, like, we know Miguel is one. Who else has been a standout in this Portuguese season?
Well, Steph is not here at the moment. He was in Oz and now he's traveling, I think, in Indo at the moment. But Simão Monteiro is also, like, I really like his surfing. He's super smooth, very technical. There's this group of kids that they've been coaching all together, that they call themselves Cult Bodyboarding. And I think they're, like, at the moment, they're, like, the best upcoming generation in Portugal. And, yeah, those are, like, the ones that just over the last few months been popping out through my eyes.
Mm-hmm. Does this cult following have any sort of rituals they do on a weekly basis that initiate certain members of the tribe? Like, is there any crazy sacrifices that are going down on, like, break walls? Are they, like, you know, getting people to swim across river mouths with chunks of meat attached to them? I don't know. What's going on? Cult sounds hectic.
The cult bodyboarding. I don't know. I think, like, the coach, Rodrigo, he's a guy that's been bodyboarding for a lot of years, and he kind of grew up in the same generation as we did. So he's been trying to pass these kids not just the technical abilities and what good bodyboarding really is, but also, like, what it comes with it, like all the what a bit of bodyboarding culture and habits and what it takes to get to chase a good wave, things like that. So like trying to bring these kids a true lifestyle of it, and so these kids are not just like growing up with what they see nowadays on Instagram and stuff like that, you know. So that's why I think they're following a really good path.
Sick. So they're getting immersed in like what it is to be a proper waterman or water woman, like in regards to just having, yeah, like the obsession almost. It is such like almost like a cult, I guess, when you do, you know, involve yourself so heavily in one thing, one passion, one leisure activity, one sport, I guess, sporting pursuit. And bodyboarding is certainly like a lifetime pursuit when you really want to get that good. And you know, like, so speaking about getting that good, man, like, you know, I always look at you as one of the first people to really bring style to, like, the European bodyboarding scene. Like, there's been definitely stylish people in and around you, but, like, you know, you're mid-30s now, Antonio?
Yeah, 33.
Yeah, see, like, I mean,
already this year.
Yeah, yeah, not like not mid, but like your early 30s, you know what I mean? Like, you've been in the scene. What I'm trying to get at is for, like, you know, a good 15 to 20 years, at least 15 years in the spotlight. And, like, yeah, man, like, you're fucking technical, bro. Like, you're smooth as you're, like, you really are, dude. Like, your reverses and your backflips and inverse and just everything that you're doing on a wave, you can tell that, like, you've really thought about it. You are continually thinking about it. Like, you compress your body really well. Like, you're very close and tight to the board where, you know, that to me, in my eyes, and I think to a lot of people, is like becoming like Jedi status in like Bugan, you know what I mean? Because once you become one with the board itself, you can kind of do anything. So it's epic. So my point being is, man, like what was it like coming up through the ranks of like the European hierarchy, so to speak, with you being almost like the shining light for style, and did you make any waves, or like was there any, were you perceived differently? Like what was it like honing in on that sort of style compared to, you know, what I would say with European bodyboarding was previously looked at with just the real competitive prowess side of getting anything done in any waves, making an ARS into a backflip, into whatever, in like, you know, doing the most on the waves to kind of win a comp compared to style?
Well, I guess, I don't know. I just kind of, as soon as I started bodyboarding, I started to get really into magazines and bodyboarding movies. And I was trying to get my hands on these movies as much as I could. And I just got obsessed by certain kind of wave ridings. And, I just felt like I wasn't identifying myself with that kind of acrobatic approach on a wave that you see in Europe and South America and stuff like that. But so, got really focused on trying to get my surfing as close to what I was seeing on these movies, from certain riders that I really like, and then just try to understand also how they work, not just in terms of style, but also in terms of functionality and hydrodynamics. And I think that's how you get to understand how a bodyboard works on a wave. So it's all about functionality, I think, and style just comes with it, I feel like.
What do you mean in hydrodynamics, man? Like, as in the way the board is cutting through the wave or the way it generates speed?
Exactly. For example, just a very, very like easy example to see is, for example, if you see someone scooping with their legs out of the face of the wave, he's probably going to slide. Like, he's probably going to lose control in his scoop. So, and that makes you understand a lot about having that grip on the wave. So, and how you can control and manage your speed as well. So I think that's just a fundamental basis of riding a wave. Like, for example, if you see nowadays, you see like a lot of people, especially even on the world tour, you see a lot of people like they're riding on the face of the wave and the inside leg is like flopping in and out, and yeah, you just feel like he's got a lot of speed, but if he finds like a more critical part of the wave, he's just not going to get control, I feel like. So yeah, simple things like this.
No, for sure. And the simplest things are the 1%ers that make you, you know, pull up under a 10-foot lip or get annihilated by a 10-foot lip. And I guess one of the most prime examples is watching you guys surf that amazing left you have there that resembles one of, like, you know, one of the most gnarliest running deep water heavy left barrels that I've ever thrown my eyes upon. And the way you guys scoop in behind that and have to then pull up after you've anchored the legs into the face to get yourself into that beautifully time position to then navigate that kind of arm bit of the way before it flares open again. Like, without that leg flare, you guys would be at the bottom of the wave and really struggling, hey?
Fully. Because, like, these kind of waves, I think, because I'm to be honest, like, I'm always, like, I'm always shit scared when I'm surfing these kind of waves. And what makes me go, like what makes me paddle into these waves is like just trusting your technique, nothing else. Technique and wave reading. And because every time I see, sometimes you see people surfing these waves that they got, they're the opposite. They got zero technique, but they got like, they're just like reckless. They're balls of steel. They just go. And most of them, they just get annihilated. I just feel like, I don't know, like I sometimes I wish I had their commitment, their balls, but but yeah, like at the same time, it's pretty cool to watch, but it's not the way I really want to surf these kind of waves. Like I don't want to accidentally make a barrel. I want to enjoy the barrel. I want to scoop into it like properly and yeah, ride it, like do what the wave is asking for. So yeah, I think that's my kind of approach on it.
Yeah, but I think your approach is the one that promotes longevity, and like your technique, like look at Kelly Slater, for example, man, or Mike Stewart. Like Mike Stewart's a perfect example of how technique over time has put him in some of the heaviest and largest situations. Like he was only surfing chippies like 5 years ago. And he had like mastered Chopu and been over there like, you know, multiple times before the world even knew about it, surfing massive 12 to 15 foot kegs. Like, you know, his technique, like don't get me wrong, he's got balls of steel too, but he's so calculated and meticulous with his approach when it comes to big wave riding that like, yeah, that technique that you're talking about and that process is so much better than just pushing over the ledge every time, because you can't sustain just pushing over the ledge and thinking that your body's going to hold up, because there's going to be one time where that wave is going to just crush your limbs to fucking smithereens. You know what I mean? And that might happen if you do use that technique and you get in a poor situation where it was almost unavoidable. Like I was talking to a good mate today, Tom Bailey, from the island, and he broke his back out there probably 10 years ago now. And he just went a 50-51 on the left. He was even reminiscing with me today that he was saying goodbye to the boys, and he knew it was a kind of a dodgy one, but, you know, we've all gone dodgy ones out there, and there's that 50-50 chance. But because of the way the wave wrapped back in, it went dry and he tried to pull out of the back. You know, in hindsight, he reckons he should have just tried to cop the flogging, because he would have probably been rolled and pushed onto his stomach or his ribs and, you know, would have hurt himself, but not landed in the position he did, because as he pulled out of the back of the wave then grabbed him and then pushed him back down onto the reef in almost like a seated position. So his bum and his back got crushed against the reef, and that's when he broke one of his vertebrae. And like, you know, that is not an example of being reckless and just pushing over the ledge, but that's an example of how things can just happen in the ocean without your control, and there's just certain situations that just get you. But he's been back out the island and taking kegs upon kegs since. It took him a while to get back out there because the rehab, and he broke a pretty bad part of his back, and he's now a physio, believe it or not, because he's obviously worked so hard on his body and he understands the biomechanics of it now. But like, he is now out there with that calculated approach. He's got a great skill set. He knows how to scoop big waves. So, you know, he's put that in place to now nurse himself through having that injury. If you're just pushing over the fucking ledge every time without that skill set, you're going to do that every couple of months. You know what I mean?
Exactly. At the end, it's just surfing. Like, why are you going to risk your life? I mean, I think it's important once you get the skill, once you get the technique, it's important to, but you also got to push yourself in terms of your mindset. You're going to go that extra ledge and like start, I don't know, like taking off on bigger and like suckier waves, I feel like. But you always need to have that calculated factor of, yeah, choosing wisely the position you're at, the wave you're going to get. And yeah, actually, unfortunately, like sometimes it's these heavy injuries that brings you that extra knowledge and that extra wave reading, like what happened to your mate Tom. So for sure, right now he's picking up the exact perfect ones at the island. without having, well, I mean, the waves of consequence, but he knows exactly where he's going to put himself into and in which position to be to avoid getting smashed again on the reef. So yeah, it's a tough game.
Oh man, isn't it? It's a serious tough game. And talking about being a tough game and putting time in the water and being noticed for, you know, going to those tough times in the water, especially with your skill set, man, like talking about the Common Thread movie and, you know, Adrian Emerton's new project that's coming along quite nicely. I know you feature heavily in it. What's it like being working with Adrian, and what are the locations you've gone and shot at so far?
Man, working with Adrian, I mean, seeing someone like Adrian with all these skills and ability to film and to make great movies, having him on our sport, like doing something for our community, it's something very, very special. And I think I'm super lucky to have met Adrian, like, I don't know, like 10 years ago, maybe more, in Portugal. So I met him a long time ago, and yeah, we just, I don't know, we just connected with each other. We kept our contact, and he always like came to Portugal. I came to see him in Australia as well, like one or two times. So it was really good to keep this friendship with him, and also like as a photographer myself and cinematographer, like, I learned a lot. Like I learned a lot with him. So he's kind of like an aspiration for me. And I think what he's trying to do is probably it will be the greatest bodyboarding movie ever made. Not in terms of performance, but in terms of communicating to the masses, to the world, what bodyboarding really is. Which I think it's lacking in our sport. Like we still got that image of being bodyboarding, being like, I don't know, like a kid's game at the beach, just catching foams and stuff like that. And I think Adrian, he will probably change that perspective, in people. So yeah, I think it's awesome what he's doing.
That's sick, man. Yeah, I mean, he speaks so highly of you too. He, whenever your name comes up, his eyes light up, and you can tell you guys have got a really good friendship going. And yeah, both feeding off each other's passions. You know, obviously he's so respectful of your bodyboarding, and vice versa with his photography and videography towards yourself. Like, it's great to see two creative minds come together in our sport and create something special, man. So like. Yeah, like, you know, looking at some of the stuff, I know you guys went to the Pacific. You guys did some pretty cool filming there. Like, what was it like on that trip, and what were the spots you visited without dropping, you know, crazy names?
Good question. So I think his main purpose with showing Common Thread is to show that bodyboarding has – the people who does it, it's not just – there's barely any professionals living out of the sport, and the people who's been pushing the limits and, well, who supports bodyboarding, it can be anyone. It can be, I don't know, it can be someone with a regular 9-to-5 job. It can be, I don't know, like just a kid pursuing his dreams, believing that he's going to be, and it could be a professional bodyboarder at some point, or I don't know, anybody. It's a sport that, it's so underrated, and there's not so many. It's really hard to make bodyboarding a living. So yeah, so he's just trying to show the a big variety of characters within our sport, and also like people, like can be someone with mental illnesses, charging crazy waves, and yeah, he's just trying to show as much diversity as possible. Also, people who care about the environment. So, yeah, that's basically what I think he's trying to show with this movie. And yeah, we got the opportunity to film. I was in Indonesia last year, and he had some time. some time left, some free time at that time. So he came to join me, and he came with Kirky as well. So it was really good. We got to spend like a week or 10 days in Indo, talking a lot about the contrasts that you see in these kind of tropical places, like not just about the waves, but people ideally think that Indo is like such a paradise, and it is, but it's like, it's so polluted at the same time. Like it's crazy. Like the amount of littering that goes through that country, and us wave riders, we are the ones responsible to make a change on this. So we were a little bit focused on environmentalism while we were in Indo, and then he also came to Portugal later in December this December 2023, and that's where we kind of focused a little bit on developing my profile kind of, and what I do around home, what I do for a living outside of bodyboarding, and how I connect my whole lifestyle with surfing. So that was the main reason of this trip, of these two trips.
Fuck, man, that's so sick. I obviously knew a little bit about the movie, but you've just explained it so well then, and understanding that there's so many other contributing factors to the meaning and reasoning behind Adrian making it. It's just, yeah, it's sick, man. He's a visionary, and I cannot wait to watch it. Can't wait to sit down with a red hot one, just glaze myself over and just be taken away by the beautiful creativeness of Adrian Emerton and co. I'm excited, man.
Yeah. No, he's a genius, man. He's 1,000% committed to this project. So yeah.
Fuck, sick. So sick to hear, man. And speaking about other projects, like I know you're a busy man, but like, what was it like contributing to the movie Above, and the Above movie? Sorry. And what was it like working with a pretty all-star cast there, bro? Like, you guys put some time and effort in to film some top-line bodyboarders. Like, you know, you could just rattle off a couple, but I've just got to drop Pierre-Louis Costes' name in there, and everyone will know that it's pretty serious. Like, what was that journey like?
Well, it's first of all, I think it's hard to define like this as a working thing, because you're doing what you really love. And to be honest, like, I felt like I was just surfing, and we had the chance to get like Seb and a few other filmers to collaborate on this project. So I think the one who really, really worked on this movie, on directing, on filming, on editing, on building the concept was Seb and Edouard. These two put a lot of work into it. And then, yeah, for each section, like, I mean, yeah, we just had to do our part and try to do our best in the water for some of these trips. So I did a little bit of filming in Indo, but it was kind of like lifestyle stuff and with some of the guidelines that Seb gave it to me as a director. But even that, like, it was super casual. I was still going to do it, even if it wasn't for Above, for my collection. I don't know. So yeah, it's hard to call it work. It was a pleasure to do this, like any other bodyboarding project. Yeah.
Wow, man. And what was it like filming some of those bigger sessions in the water, and what sort of setups were you using to film like housings and different sort of camera models? Like what was that like?
So in Portugal, like Seb was joining us in a few sessions with his Blackmagic camera, and for the shots in the water, we had Gastão Intrude. I don't know if the name rings a bell, but he used to compete on the world tour, so he's pretty much the best water filmer that we have here in Portugal, and one of the best in the world. So yeah, he was out there with us in a few sessions. Luckily, we had like Marley as well around, like Marley, Louis, and they were around at this time of the year where they usually come for the World Tour events in Europe. So luckily, like Louis and Marley, like Marley was in Ireland and he did a trip down here. Like he wanted to spend some time here in Europe and in Portugal. But Louis took some time off after the comps, also like to stay around here and chase some swells, which was really good. And I guess we were lucky because we scored like a little bit of everything in like a month, pretty much, or a month and a half. So we got like from beaches to like big reef breaks to fun reef breaks. So yeah, it was everything, all the ingredients were here. And yeah, we were pretty lucky to have Swell and to have these guys available for filming. So yeah.
So sick, man. The editing and the cinematography, the videographers, the athletes and the riders, like everyone a part of it was such a world-class production. Where can everyone find it, man? Like, where can you stream it from?
You can find on Vimeo. It's on Vimeo On Demand. And if you go to Seb's profile and my profile, some of the writers of the movie, you can find the link that will go directly through the movie. And there's also Seb also made like a DVD platform, like the good old days. It's more like for like collectors. So whoever still got a DVD player at home, you can also watch it.
That's so sick. How is it like now we're talking about DVDs being old school and, you know, back in the day, like you'd have all the Rush tapes and all the Tension tapes on like VHS and yeah, just crazy to see that, crazy to see it's gone full circle. Now no one cares about discs, eh? It's just about whatever's on your phone or whatever's in the cloud, man. It's just floating above us, all that information.
It still feels good to have something physical, right? Like it's
for sure.
Like we grew up in such a generation that physical things were everything. And at least you don't get, like, to have something physical, it will save you from, because we never know, like, someday stuff gets lost in the virtual world and you don't know how to find it, and at least you got an insurance.
For sure. And what if you have a crazy solar flare or some sort of asteroidal activity and we just have all satellites down? We have, like, you know, we have some sort of terrorist attack and we have a mass takeover and all of our electronic devices are disabled, but you can still somehow get DVDs going. Like, fuck exactly. Yeah, bro. What I'll be doing is bunkering down with all my canned meat and fruit somewhere 20 meters underground, and I'll just be putting on those DVDs on replay with diesel generators just powering the fuck out of it.
Yeah, they're like gold. They're like gold.
Yeah, they are, man, for sure. I look over – still watch the Passing Through one, even though I can watch it on YouTube. I still put it on from time to time on DVD player, and I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, same. Especially because, like, sometimes there's so much stuff on the internet nowadays and that it's sometimes I find it hard to filter the good stuff. Like, I just want to watch, like, a good bodyboarding clip or something, and the ones I could still remember the most are, like, the ones I like the DVD stuff. So yeah, it's
definitely, man. Yeah, the hard copies. We'll never let them die. We'll never let them die. Exactly. And dude, you've made time for this potty, which is so sick. And you're really tight schedule at the moment because I believe you're only 24 hours away for leaving for Scotland with your better half at the moment. Can you give us a rundown on that trip coming up?
Yeah, like we've been. I don't know. Me and my partner, we've been. We've always been attracted to surfing in like harsh environments, and we still want to do it while our bodies still allows it. So we thought, like, well, Ireland was also on the top of the list. But the thing is, because now I'm sharing a life with a person that also surfs, and we don't surf the same kind of waves. So we always got to find a balance, and we felt like in Scotland, there's not just only like incredible slabs for bodyboarding, but there's also like a few good point breaks, and it's, I don't know. We also like the underrated aspect of the destinations that we go surf to. So yeah, we thought, well, Scotland is the place to go. So So yeah, we've been planning it for the last couple of months, and we don't want to go just for like a swell and bounce off. We because when we travel, we do appreciate like trying to live a little bit of the local life and putting some time into it. And yeah, so we decided to take the risk, fly without a swell, and just hope for the best. And yeah, still like travel, explore, get some local food, and try to find more waves. I don't know. Yeah, just feel the true ambience of the place. Yeah,
dude. So 8 weeks over there. 8 weeks. Like
no. Three. Sorry, 3 weeks. Yeah, we're going for a month.
Oh, three. I was gonna say, fuck me. How did you get 8 weeks off work? That's
I wish that's so. Epic. I wish so. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, it's still 3 weeks.
Because like both of us, we can work remotely, so that's the reason why we can take all this time traveling throughout the year. We just try to align our jobs with these trips, and yeah, we just hope whenever the charts are good, we don't have to sit on our computer and do homework.
Be square eyed. What's your one wave that you really want to score, Antonio? Like, I know, you know, looking at Far North, Benny Pat players masterpiece with Todd Barnes. That was obviously the bull. Would you ever go near that thing?
I don't want to have anything to do with that wave. I kind of want to check it. Just to feel a bit of the mysticism of that place. But there's a few other waves that I got in my mind. There's this other very similar right-hander, not as dry as the ball, but it's pretty similar though. I want to have it a crack and then try to get some ramps at this other left-hander that has like an incredible wrapping bowl. But yeah, just I still have no idea. I know the area where they are, but I still have no idea how to get there, so I'm pretty keen to go there and just do a bit of driving, scout these places and get ready for when the swell comes.
Hectic. And are you looking forward to smashing a bit of Scottish liqueur? Like, I know they're pretty into their whiskeys there, brah. Like, are you going to be sampling the finest and swirling it around at night in front of a beautiful warm fireplace, or what's the go?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind to. Like, I mean, I've never been into Scotch, more of a wine person, but...
Yes, Scotch, sorry. Very... Whiskey's Irish. Fuck, Scotch.
True, whiskey, Scotch, yeah, the same thing almost.
Yeah, but, almost, yeah. But I mean, if you were Scottish and Irish listening to that, you'd be pissed off that I called it whiskey.
Yeah, I just made like these kind of drinks, but I've never been like, I don't know, I just don't know how to taste them well. So, but yeah, hopefully this trip will bring me some knowledge in that field and try to like, hopefully I can learn how to enjoy these drinks. So just for like, just to feel a little bit part of the culture, and not that I want to bring it back and create it and have it here in Portugal, but. Yeah, just more of a cultural thing to do, I guess.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, like when in Rome, they say, I guess. So when in Scotland, drink shitloads of scotch and be merry.
Exactly. Just got to make sure I keep hydrated.
Yeah, fucking oath. Yeah, maybe like you have a stiff scotch, just have a water between everyone, and you'll be pissing like a racehorse, but at least you'll be hydrated.
Exactly. Especially like imagine hitting a pub straight after surf, like you're fully dehydrated from – like shivering in those conditions and crossing those fields. So the last thing you want to do is like take a straight shot out of a scotch.
Dude, I know, man.
Yeah.
Do you follow Matt Van on Instagram?
Yeah. I follow him. Yeah. We I met him in Portugal a couple of years ago, actually, at the car park once.
Yeah.
But he knows those fields pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I was going to say, if you haven't contacted him yet, you should probably give him a BL because, dude, like, he seems like he's done a fair bit of traveling in those parts and done it on the cheap and, like, real, real wild, like, bareback sort of traveling, like, just throwing up swags and tents in the middle of fields and
dealing with all sort of weather systems and getting to learn the landscape really well. So he'd be a guy to tap into for sure.
Yeah, that guy's wild, man. He's done some. He's put some time onto these places and a lot of effort and commitment. So that's a good idea. I'd be stoked to have someone to share these ways with. So hopefully you'll be keen to even like fly up for a swell or something. That'd be sick.
Yeah. Fucking earth, man. I'm sure he's only an Instagram DM message away. But man, I just wanted to. I know I've got to cut a little bit short, Antonio. But I've got to get back to my crazy Easter egg eating child at the moment. We're about to put him in the bath, and he's had this crazy sugar high all weekend. He's usually not the biggest sugar eater, so he's been bouncing off the walls. And my missus is heavily pregnant at the moment. It's like Lozzie, so it's just like
the second all one systems go.
Sorry,
heaps of bunnies hopping.
Oh mate, there's been shit happening in the Shire over this weekend. Don't get me wrong, it's been lovely, but we're gonna have to ship all the chocolate off. I think she's gonna take him to school this week and just hand it out because sugar's addictive, bro.
It's the biggest drug in the world, 100%.
Oh, isn't it, bro? Honestly, I have been eating so much sugar. Like, I mean, really good most days, and then it comes to the evening, I'll just smash some chocolate. And I'm like, fuck, what am I doing, cunt? Like, this shouldn't be the way that I'm living. And once it's in the house, I just need to eat it.
I know, but I mean, you got to live. If it tastes good, you got to do it every now and then with moderation. Yeah. And you got to live a little.
Moderation. That's the key word, Antonio, moderation. Seems like you've got everything pretty well moderated, bro.
I'm trying my best to. Life is all about keeping the balances. Yeah.
It is, man, it is. Well, dude, thanks so much for coming on the potty and giving us a rundown on the – oh, dude, so sweet. And the European winter, thanks for speaking about that. Thanks for speaking about all your projects. And good luck in Scotland, bro, because it sounds like you're going to have a hell of a time.
Cheers, man. The pleasure was all mine. It was always a pleasure to hop on the lounge with Mr. Luke.
We'll have to get you back on. There's always a seat there for you waiting, man. And, when you come back from Scotland and Common Thread films out, we'll definitely have to get you back on and recap another epic 6 months because I know it's going to be epic.
Sick, man. I'm pretty keen on it. I'm pretty keen. Always happy.
Should be, bro. good thing to come to good people. Cheers, bro.
Cheers. Happy Easter. And thanks, give it to Aussie and to your kid. And hope I can see you soon. Man.
Yes, definitely, bro. I'll see you either in Portugal or Australia or some part of the world very soon.
Yep. Cheers, bro.
You. See you, bro.